What is up, everyone? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, before I get to the rest of today's episode, I'd like to give my customary shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Today's episode is going to stray considerably from most of the content I do on this channel. Typically, I talk about certain cards or certain things that I like about EDH or Magic in general. But today, I'm going to specifically talk about a style of deck building that I really enjoy and I feel is very misunderstood in this community, and that is jank. Now, again, there's a lot of definitions out there for what exactly constitutes jank, and I'm going to go over some of those misconceptions and also some of the ways to really look at jank as not being a completely trash format, but instead being a very complex and diverse way to build EDH decks. That's why today's episode is effectively a treatise on why jank is not, again, that's in all caps, is not junk. I'm going to start today's episode with a quick definition of what I feel the community believes jank to be and how I personally define jank. The definition of jank from what I've seen in the last year or so that I've really been tuned into this is effectively a kind of deck that people consider to be something outside the normal, suboptimal, if you will, using suboptimal cards, decks, and strategies to play the game instead of a quote-unquote more optimal way of looking at the game. And I feel like this really falls under the Channel Fireball Power Scale that came out a while back, the 1 to 10 scale, where 1 to 2 is technically considered jank, compared to what most people would consider to be tuned to good Magic being between about 6 and 8. And again, I wanted to harp on something interesting. There was an interesting episode on the Command Zone's Game Night Stats episode, in particular, that came out a while back. And what really struck me about that was roughly how powerful decks people like to play typically in our format. And they concluded that ultimately the power level that was used the most, again, this is across Command Fests, as well as the Game Nights episode and other creators, was that most decks were probably falling somewhere between 6 to 8 on the power level scale. Again, this is going to be very finely tuned to optimized decks with a lot of very powerful cards, a lot of very expensive cards as well, but mostly in the 7 to 8 category where people are really taking their decks, they're taking their strategies, and they're really updating them as much as they can, again, using the fetch lands, just trying to get just under the cusp of CEDH and uber-powerful decks, and basically sitting in that perfect sweet spot right there. And I feel like this is really an unfair way of looking at jank when you consider that the same Channel Fireball scale considers jank to be a 1 or a 2, effectively unplayable and unfocused. Again, this is a little bit different than their definition of Battlecruiser Magic, which, as I look at it, is more like a low-mid-power scale, scaled-down version of EDH. They consider jank to effectively be only themed decks and very unfocused piles of 99 cards plus a commander. Another one of the issues that I really have with the suboptimal definition are the terms that we hear bandied around a lot on social media or in other content, and these are the terms auto-include and staple. We as Commander and Magic players, in general, value cards based on the most optimal version of an ability, not necessarily the effect. So again, I'm going to be looking at a card like Arcane Signet. Again, when it came out a couple years ago in those Brawl precons, it really broke our format because it effectively allowed us to have a 2-drop artifact that could tap for any of the colors of our commander. Commander's color identity. Which, again, replaced some very good cards. Again, something like Warren Power Stone, or even the Signets, the regular Guild Signets. All of a sudden, Arcane Signet was much better. So, we now, as commander players, look at Arcane Signet specifically, as an auto-include or a staple, the fact that you basically any deck can throw that in there, and aside from colorless decks, which can't use Arcane Signet, effectively the deck can't be worse off for not having, or it cannot be worse off for having that card in the deck, excuse me. And I feel like when you have a card like this and you have those terms auto-include and staple that are bandied around so much, you end up hearing a lot of times that effectively replaces cards, makes other things effectively unplayable. So in the case of the Arcane Signet, all of a sudden perhaps the Guild Clue Stones, which you may have been using in your decks as a mana rock, again, 3 mana to tap for one of your guild's colors, or you can tap and sacrifice to draw a card, all of a sudden becomes completely unplayable in that view. And over time, I feel like cards just get thrown out, churned out, because something better has come along, and the community no longer feels that these are optimal or even playable, to the point where they even say these cards are extremely unplayable. And I feel like that's a really bad way of looking at things, because yes, Arcane Signet is extremely powerful. Yes, Command Tower is extremely powerful. But sometimes you don't necessarily need to have the most optimal version of cards in your deck to be able to have a powerful deck. I mean, especially when you're looking at staples, like, again, Rhystic Study, Smothering Tithe, Cyclonic Rift. Again, these are auto-include staples. I've heard that so many times, that you have to have these cards in your deck. And what I'm trying to go at here is the fact that you don't have to have those cards. You can have very budget versions that don't necessarily have those same sorts of issues. So what I'm really trying to get at here is I feel like when we talk about jank as suboptimal versus the optimal, is that we end up with this kind of toxic discussion of how do we try to optimize our decks to the nth degree using only auto-includes, using only staples, and I feel like that really kind of homogenizes the card pool, that all of a sudden, if you're going to be playing the same exact decks with the same auto-includes, the same staples, and it feels like the game gets kind of stale the higher power you get on the scale, at least to me personally, because you see the exact same cards day in, day out, and you really don't see a lot of variety all the time. So at this point, you may be asking me, hey, MJ, we understand that you don't necessarily like auto-includes, you don't like staples, and you may have a problem against high power magic. So how would you describe jank? Well, never fear, I'm going to explain my point as well as I can. So the way I look at jank is that it may not always include the auto-includes and staples. Those may actually be quite problematic when looking at cards and descriptions for cards. But jank decks don't have to necessarily be a bad or powerless deck. The way I look at it, jank decks can still be as powerful as you want them to be. Now, again, there are going to be limits to this. You're going to only be able to get so much out of a janky commander or a strategy. Again, this is the same thing this is the same thing you end up seeing in CEDH a lot, where there's only a certain number of viable commanders in that format, and anything else is effectively considered unplayable. So, again, you're going to have a certain threshold where you really can't push your deck past power-wise and keep it jank. Because, again, there's going to be a point where all of a sudden, if you put too many of the auto-includes, too many of the staples in there, your deck is no longer going to be jank. It's effectively going to be finely tuned in a standard deck. You're probably going to end up changing commander, and then effectively you've thrown all the bits of the jank deck away, and you've just created a finely tuned deck. It's no longer jank at that point. So again, how I want to define jank are strategies that may not be completely prescribed on the card. So again, we're going to be looking at commanders who have a lot of different abilities, say Atraxa, you know, she has, what, 40-some different themes on her EDH rec page. You can build her in so many different ways. And so what I want to caution my listeners against here is saying that you can build a janky commander by effectively running the top theme on the EDH rec page for that commander. That really doesn't work, because it means that that's a very popular strategy, and it's not janky, it's not different. So it's really not anything new. You know, you can't run a Golos lands build and call it jank unless you're literally running all, like, the life lands, gaining one life, everything comes untapped. And even then, it's still, it's been done. And so another way I want to look at jank decks are considering commanders with weird abilities or which no one uses. Again, I like going and looking at the EDH rec listing of different commanders and kind of seeing how many or how few decks a certain commander has. And, you know, if a commander has hundreds and hundreds of decks, maybe you don't look into building them. Maybe you look into the one that has a couple hundred. Try something different. Just the ones that don't necessarily have the most obvious abilities, but the ones which really make you try to think outside the box. Those are really good jank commanders. And again, a third way I want to define jank is also using suboptimal card choices, whether this is for price or for effect, but that work with the synergy. And again, this has a very wide description. You can take this however you want, but effectively, when you're looking at jank, you're going to be using suboptimal cards, and probably in a suboptimal strategy, but again, you're going to be fine with that, and that's all right. That's what I'm here to tell you about, is playing jank means you're still having fun with the cards that you're playing, even if they're not considered staples. And again, I did want to bring this up again, but top commanders, again, the ones that have the most decks on EDH Rec, cannot be janky. Let's just be honest here. Is that I once had a Muldroth of the Gravetide deck back when I was first really learning how to play a couple years back. And some would probably consider it janky because it wasn't optimized, but it was just really unfocused and just a terrible deck. I remember a certain game where I basically ended up attacking with Muldroth with the Helm of the Host equipped because I couldn't bring anything back from my graveyard. Yeah, that game didn't go so well. And it after a whole bunch of games, I realized that the deck wasn't janky. It just sucked. So I tore that apart because it did not have the synergy that I wanted to. But again, if I really wanted to, I could have jammed a whole bunch of staples in there and made a very powerful deck. But that's not jank. Muldrotha is too powerful for a jank deck to really work because you can just play all the best cards. The value is stapled to the commander. This is another problem with like Chulainn or Korvold, that they have so much value stapled to them that it's not a challenge to play with them. This is not like Tatiova where you get to draw a card every time you play a land or that new legendary serpent from the last set. It just doesn't work that way. Jank commanders are ones where it's a challenge to try to make them work, but if you can make it work, it's worthwhile. Because the way I look at it is that jank is effectively a challenge because it defines a set of inherent deck building restrictions that you are willingly putting on yourself to make it harder to brew a good deck. And you're going to be looking to build a good deck using pieces that are not considered powerful or even usable on their own. So you're challenging yourself as a deck builder to try to make the best with a very suboptimal set of pieces. So again, I feel like jank cannot be done by picking a really powerful commander, because you could play Tatiova on 50 lands and still just do amazing things. But, you know, it's still not going to be janky because Tatiova is just that strong. Muldrotha is just that strong. But jank, on the other hand, is completely different because you're not necessarily trying to build a bad deck using a good commander. You're trying to find a commander that may not necessarily have the same kind of power, but you can still have a very synergistic deck that does a lot of things well, just maybe not in the most optimal way. And before I go on, I feel like I should clarify that jank decks don't necessarily mean the same thing as a rogue deck. Again, a rogue deck is something that is found a lot more in the standard 60-card formats, where a deck can break into the meta that has absolutely nothing to do with anything else in an established competitive meta and make some damage, make some noise in a competitive environment. And I don't look at jank like that, because a rogue deck can still have the auto-includes, have the staples, but just use them in different ways. But jank requires a complete changing of your focus, because you can build a rogue deck that's extremely strong. You can build a jank deck that is extremely strong, but I feel like you're not coming at it from the same point of view, because a rogue deck still is looking for ways to try to be able to do something different, but still is influenced by the meta that it's in. Jank, I feel, in EDH especially, doesn't really require that because there really isn't the same kind of meta. You don't have an established competitive meta to try to be matching yourself against. So Jank is not a rogue deck because effectively you're trying to build something based on your own preferences instead of what is being done in the meta and trying to find a way to beat that. On the same token, Jank really doesn't have a budget restriction of its own. Though the way I personally look at it is that it's very budget-friendly because of the card choices. If you are playing quote-unquote suboptimal cards, if you're not using quote-unquote auto-include or quote-unquote staple cards, you could save an awful lot of money by trying to go to the third, fourth, fifth options for doing an effect if you can pay 10 cents for it instead of $20. So instead of using that Ristic Study, which costs you $20 to $25 on its own, you might try to find some ways to have similar effects for $2 or even just use some more 50-cent card draw spells. Again, it's all up to you as the deck brewer, but typically, as I've found, you end up saving money because you're trying to find cards that still work but don't necessarily hurt your wallet to purchase them. So it's another interesting way to look at the deck-building restrictions of Jank. The next point I'd like to make about Jank decks is why I'm so interested in making Jank decks. Again, this may sound like preaching or like trying to explain my whole reason for deck building, and again, I want to make it very clear that I'm not against anyone's deck building. You need to build the decks that you want to build, and you shouldn't let anyone else tell you about how to build your decks or your card choices. I just wanted to use this opportunity to just talk about the way I build decks, the way I look at building Jank, and try to explain some of the process in case you were ever interested in trying this for yourself, because I promise it's a very interesting but rewarding challenge to try to do this. So the point of Jank to me is to find a strategy where your opponents feel like they've had an enjoyable time playing against your deck because it is different. Now, again, you can have this thing happen, this kind of experience happen in any environment. It doesn't necessarily have to be Jank. You could be playing CEDH, you could be playing a highly tuned 7 or 8 deck on that Channel Fireball scale, or you could just be playing that Lord of the Rings or Star Wars themed deck, whatever. But again, a lot of the time, your opponents aren't going to remember the 10 games that they played against Urza Lord, High Artificer, or Golos, for instance, because you're going to be seeing a lot of those at tables. But, you know, they might remember that one game, that one time you tried something new, and you completely wowed them with it. So that's the way I approach Jank, is that I'm trying to not only build a deck that can actually compete in a game, but I'm also trying to impress my opponents because I'm able to take a suboptimal card shell, that challenge I mentioned earlier, and you still make it viable. So in this vein, Jank is a haven for quote-unquote unplayable cards. Now, these mostly fall under commons and uncommon rarities, but, you know, can also fall under the rare and mythic rare slots from time to time. And most of these cards are usually end up being limited only. Again, you may only be able to play with them in booster draft, and that's the point of a lot of cards. There's over 25,000 cards in Magic's history, and, you know, maybe only 1,000 of them are really considered EDH staple playable. So there's a lot of cards out there that really don't have a good home because, again, whether it's due to power creep or whether it's just due to design, they're really unplayable for most, if not all, formats. So the way I look at trying to build a Jank deck is I try to find some commons and uncommons, or just, you know, some chaff cards that, you know, may have been overlooked but fit within the theme of what I'm trying to do, because this is how you're going to be building the shell of your deck. You're going to be trying to find some cards that no one has heard of. And that's a good thing. Do not be afraid to have a card where an opponent has to look it up, or again, when we can be in person again, can pick it up and read the card for themselves. That is perfectly all right. And you're really going to want to be finding cards that fit outside the norm. You're not going to be wanting to throw in all the auto-includes and staples. You're going to be using the Clue Stones, for instance, instead of Arcane Signa to try to get that third or fourth mana rock in your deck. Although there's nothing wrong with using Arcane Signet, but again, good Jank, as far as I'm concerned, requires you to think outside the box a little bit. So you're going to be trying to find cards that fit outside that norm of auto includes and staples, and which are typically considered bad. But you want to use them because they can work in the right situation. Again, you've probably chosen your commander for a specific reason, or you've chosen a strategy for a specific reason, and you know that these cards, even if they're not totally usable in most, if not all, builds, they might have the right effect on yours, and that's something you really need to remember about building jank. And again, don't be afraid to experiment with certain cards. Again, this happens with everyone trying to build any deck. I have very high-powered decks that I use, and I experiment with cards all the time in them. Again, if those cards work in your build, that's great. Then you keep those cards in there, and you might surprise some people with some janky card selections in higher-powered decks. And, you know, if those cards don't work out, then you can always change it up. That's the whole point of EDH, is that we're not here to... We're not going to sit here and play one deck all the time. We're constantly changing how we build decks. We, as EDH players, we tear our decks apart and we build new ones. That's just what we do. That's the whole point of why we play Magic. We just like building new things and trying to challenge ourselves. So being a jank brewer just means that you are not afraid to experiment with cards. You are the mad scientist. You can figure something out, make it work, and all the power to you for doing that. So again, I don't want you to worry about what the community says are playable and unplayable. Jank can completely be what we call magical Christmas land if you want it to be, and if you enjoy that. Because maybe if it doesn't work 15 times, maybe that one time it will work and you'll be able to completely blow the rest of the table away. And that is the power of jank, is you want to be able to enjoy what you're doing. And if you have some weird, crazy combination of cards that does a thing every now and then, but you still want to play that deck, people are going to remember that. And do not let others try to stop you from doing that. People will try to tell you that these cards that are suboptimal are not worth playing. You should be using the Arcane Cygnus. You should be using Cyclonic Rift, Rhystic Study, Smothering Tithe. But don't let others stop you from enjoying your game. If what you want to do is build a janky deck with a janky commander doing a janky thing, do that. It's your deck, your game, your fun. And if you're having fun with the jank deck, you do it that way. I want to give an example of what I would consider trying to use cards that may not be totally playable, but may be overlooked in a lot of scenarios. So when I was doing the Throne of Eldraine pre-release back in December of 2019, I, again, was doing very badly at it because obviously I'm not a very good sealed player. I'm an EDH player, what can I say? But between rounds, I noticed that there was a pile of chaff commons sitting on the table, and I started to rifle through them. Again, I wasn't going to try to find anything I could throw into my decks, per se, because obviously that'd be cheating, and I didn't want to cheat at the event, even though I was doing poorly. But what I did find on the top of the pile was a Merrileaf Pixie. And Merrileaf Pixie is a 2-mana flyer, maybe a 2-2, I can't quite recall. But effectively costs blue and a green, and is a mana dork for blue and a green. And it's just an uncommon from that set, you know, nothing world-breaking, nothing earth-shattering here. But that card really called to me from that chaff pile as a jank brew, is basically saying, play me. You know, the person who pulled me didn't want me, they left me here in the chaff pile, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. But I was compelled as a deck builder to pick up that card and try to find a way to make it work. And again, since it is a mana dork, it was much easier to find a way to make it work. But on the other hand, every time I draw that card in my Rashmi Eternity's Crafter deck, I'm very happy to see it because I feel like I have that personal connection to the card. Because I was able to pick it out of that chaff pile and turn it into an all-star in that deck. And that's another thing you really need to look for in jank decks, is that you're not just building a deck that 100 other people have built. You're trying to build your own beautiful machine. You're trying to do something that fits your personality. That's the whole reason why we play EDH. And again, I know that there's a lot of deck techs out there, a lot of ways of trying to find how you optimize new commanders, especially during preview season. And I don't always really prescribe to those. Yes, sometimes you might be able to find broken interactions with certain cards, but on the other hand, I really enjoy building decks that make me happy. And honestly, if that means avoiding the deck text, that's just what happens. I like trying to find interesting interactions on my own using cards in my long box, finding chaff cards and chaff piles at pre-release events, at least when we could have those at our local LGSs, and just be able to play with those cards and really have that personal interaction with the cards. And that's really what makes EDH fun, and that's what makes Jank fun, because you are able to find a use. It's a haven for unplayable cards, those commons and uncommons that otherwise gather dust in your long box may have a use because they fit in your strategy. So like my Marileaf Pixie works great as a mana dork in my Roshmi deck, which in itself is a Jank deck. You never know what cards may end up being the secret all-stars of your Jank brews. The next section I wanted to talk about is the challenge of playing with Jank. Again, the higher power commanders typically fall under higher powered commanders because they do amazing things. Your Muldrotha, your Golos, your Tatiova. The list goes on and on because Wizards keeps printing extremely powerful commanders that reward you for playing the game or reward you for playing a certain strategy. And Jank doesn't always work that way. Because again, you're trying to play a suboptimal strategy with a very tuned and synergistic deck, yes, but it's still a suboptimal strategy in a lot of cases because it's kind of out of the norm there. So, again, it's going to be a completely different circumstance than if you just plop down your Tatiova deck with 50 lands, let's say, and you just draw a bunch of cards, gain a bunch of life because you're playing lands. Well, the way I look at it is that Jank requires lots of piloting skill because your commander doesn't always vomit that kind of value. But you have the same feeling of confidence that your deck will support whatever your commander's doing if you built the deck well and you know when your opportunities are to strike. So playing Jank requires you to have a high level of piloting skill. And honestly, in this way, I personally consider Jank to be more difficult to play with and win with than high-powered commanders, high-powered games, because you have to utilize every bit of your deck building and piloting skills to make it work. You don't have the ability to be able to just play Muldrotha and then get a whole bunch of fetch lands out of your graveyard. You won't have Tatiova giving you life and drawing you a card every time you play a land, which is stuff you're going to be doing anyway. Your Jank deck requires you to jump through some interesting hoops, some restrictions, those self-imposed restrictions, as I mentioned earlier. You have to jump through those hoops as you're playing the game. But it's going to require a lot of mental discipline to really understand when to try to advance your board and when not to. Again, piloting skill means everything in all levels of EDH. But I feel like Jank requires even more piloting skill because you have to know the limitations of your deck and you have to have accounted for those when you've built your deck. And again, your pieces are probably not going to be as optimal as your opponents, let's just be honest. You're probably not going to be playing with as many other Jank decks as you're going to be playing with optimized or at least fine-tuned decks, the 5 to 8 on the Channel Fireball scale. Well, if you're coming in with a 5, chances are your opponents are going to be playing something like a 7. And again, sometimes you're just not going to have a chance with your Jank decks. Again, like I said, there are going to be power level differences, and you're probably not going to be able to win most of the games you try to punch up a weight class on. But if you're playing with similar powered decks, you're going to have a really good chance because you built that deck yourself. You made sure that there is, as long as you made sure there's synergy in there, as long as you made sure the pieces work just fine, even in your kind of weird rule set, you have a chance as long as you know what your opportunities are and you know when to strike. So the way I look at it is it's more difficult to try to get the Jank to work because unlike trying to find two cards, let's say, to get your infinite combo to win the game and half your deck is just looking for those cards, you have to pilot your deck in such a way to try to be able to make all the suboptimal pieces you have in there work well. And that requires a lot of skill, yes, some luck, but it also requires every bit of the discipline you put in as a deck builder. It's the ultimate challenge. It's the Rube Goldberg machine compared to the Lamborghini, as I would like to put it. Is that it may not work 10 times or, 9 times out of 10, but But that one time, it may just completely pop off and surprise everybody and just completely one-shot the entire table. Or, you know, maybe 5 out of 10 times, you're going to be able to make some moves mid-game that your opponents will not be expecting because they don't know the power of the jank in your deck. And that's what I'm trying to push here, is jank is not always going to be competitive. But jank can always be useful to have if you've built your strategy around it and you know your deck. If you know how to pilot it, you will have a chance. And it's okay to dream when you're making a jank deck. Again, when we're looking at the archetypes of Magic players, we typically have the Timmy, the Spike, and the Johnny as some of the most common ways of looking at EDH players. And jank players don't necessarily all have to fall under the Timmy category. But how I play Magic personally is I am definitely a Timmy player. I was originally drawn to EDH slash Commander because you could use cards that were considered suboptimal, and you could do interesting new strategies that fit my personality. So I love being a Timmy player because I love big splashy plays and just fun interactions and just having fun. So if you want to give this sort of game a shot, next time you want a challenge for deck building or want to wow your friends, definitely look into building a jank deck. Because it's really worth it, even if you don't win, because you'll surprise your friends, and you may become a better deck builder or deck pilot than you were previously. Before I finish today's episode, I want to give a quick example of how I build a jank deck. So I'm going to be using my Kothafed Soul Hoarder deck, which currently has about 40 deck lists available on EDH Rec. He's a 6/6 flying demon for 4 black-black, so mono-black, and whenever a permanent goes into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, or at least from play, you, as the Kothafed player, lose a life and draw a card. So it's a commander that I did originally build because I heard from the creation and the larger player community that Kothafed was effectively unplayable. And I took this as a personal challenge because, again, my personality is always trying to find interesting new things. My entire life I've been trying to build things that are completely different than the norm. I have extremely powerful, extremely mainstream decks. I have a Queen Marchesa deck. I have an Alayla deck. I have a Rashmi deck, even though it's a little bit different. But the point is, I still have some very popular commanders in my commander arsenal. But I wanted to use that challenge of Kothafed is unplayable, and I wanted to challenge that notion that I could build a very powerful deck using a commander that has a very huge downside. So I ended up building that deck, and I have an awful lot of fun with it because it does what it needs to very well. I'm able to draw cards on it. Sure, I lose a lot of life, but there's ways to be able to gain that life back in the deck and force my opponents to sacrifice permanents, and it's a great deck, and I love it to death. And again, I've played it on a couple of streams. If you haven't had an opportunity, you should go check out Magic with Zuby's stream from late December, where I did bring Kothafed on there and, you know, did fairly well, even though I easily had the weakest deck at the table. But some interesting things that I did about that deck to kind of make it even more fun was that I just run a lot of basic lands. I end up finding that utility lands can be extremely expensive or just don't necessarily work in that deck. And to make it work, I just run a lot of basics. It may not be optimal, but, you know, if I'm going to be able to hit my land drops and make sure I get black mana, that's all that matters for those 2 and 3 pip cards in there that have big splashy effects. And something else I did, again, something really silly to shake up my deck, was I even used the Tron lands, so Urza's Power Plant, Urza's Mine, Urza's Tower, in the deck, plus occasionally sometimes slot in an expedition map to try to find one of them. And when asked why I have them in there, I just honestly have to say, just because I want to. There's no value for me having these in there, except the fact that I had a playset of these cards sitting around, and I figured a monocolored deck would be the perfect place to throw them in there. By the day of this recording, I still have yet to assemble all three of the lands. I think I've gotten two of them in a certain game because I'm not going and looking for them. I hope that I'll eventually be able to draw all three of them and play all three of them and get the extra mana. But again, the fact is that no one expects a turn one Urza's Power Plant in a mono black deck. And you will see that in the in that game I mentioned earlier. If you go and check out Twitch, you'll be able to see that I had the Tron land turn one, and it was definitely not expected by my opponents. And it's just funny that way. The deck also uses a whole bunch of common and uncommon creatures in there to try to make the deck work. And a lot of even common or uncommon artifacts to try to be able to gain some life, do some things, gain some mana. And again, the deck is just really fun to play because it's not just full of staples. It's full of a lot of cards that really don't have a lot of use, but in the right build, with the right commander, can really shine and can actually be quite explosive. I've actually won quite a few games against my playgroup playing much more powerful decks with my Kotha-Fed deck because it just synergizes so well, and combined with my piloting skill, it may not be as good as my opponent's deck, but if I know what the opportunities and the challenges are for my deck and I know when to pick my spots, it can be an absolute game ender at the wrong time for my opponents if they ignore you. So Jank is not a powerless deck if you synergize well. My Kotha-Fed deck synergizes very well, and that's why it can win even against more powerful opponents. At this point, I hope I have you interested in building your own Jank deck if you haven't already. Here's some tips on how to get started. I first try to find a commander or a strategy that I feel hasn't really been done before or hasn't really been done in a certain way. So again, this is maybe looking for a commander that hasn't gotten much love or has a significant downside staple to it, or just doesn't really... Or find a strategy that doesn't really work with an or really doesn't have an established play pattern for an existing commander. And then try to build around that. Build a solid foundation, understand where your deck is trying to go, what cards you need, and then go from there. Use online resources as much as you need, talk to other people, listen to podcasts, listen to my podcast, but again, I'm not going to be greedy here. There's a lot of other great creators out there. Listen to what they have to say on the subject. But again, don't be afraid to take chances and try something new. I run a lot of basic lands in my deck. You don't necessarily have to, but I find that it helps sometimes with the mana curve. And you can always find some sort of weird theme. I mean, again, this is the perfect place for a goat tribal or something. Now, that may not be the best. But, you know, with Call Time coming out and a whole bunch of changelings, you might be able to make Goat Tribal work. I mentioned on a previous episode how much I love Trading Posts, so if you can make Goat Tribal work, I'd be really happy to play against you and probably lose to it, but we still have fun. And again, just don't be afraid to listen to the way you want to build your decks. And don't worry about what the community says are playable and unplayable cards. Jank is a haven for the cards that don't really see a lot of play, and Jank building of decks is kind of a haven from the auto includes and the staples. It's really the whole bones of the format. It's what got me into EDH in the first place, and it's what keeps me playing EDH. I probably wouldn't be playing nearly as much if I was just playing my Marchesa or Layla decks all the time. Sure, they're powerful, but you know, they kind of do the same thing every time, and after a while that gets boring. But the Jank decks, I'm never unhappy to get out of the deck box, because I know that I put the time, the sweat, the effort into building that deck, and I have a lot of fun when my opponent just says, wow, what does that card do? Or, wow, that was a great interaction, doing whatever it is. If I can get Kotha-Fed to do an amazing thing, then I know that I've done my job as a deck builder, and I know that I've done my job as a pilot of that deck, and I know that I'm having fun. And that is really what I wanted to get here. Jank is not junk. It's not just unplayable cards that are thrown in a pile of 99 cards and basic lands and whatnot. Jank can be powerful if you want it to be. Jank can be synergistic. Jank can be good. If you've liked what you've heard today, You can find the back catalog of my podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever fine podcasts are found. You can also give me a follow on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. And that wraps up today's episode on why Jank is not junk and it's worth your time as an EDH player to give it a try. My name's MJ. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Have a great rest of your day.